Welcome. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another podcast episode of Real Conversations About Aging Parents. I have a repeat guest. Hi, Renee. How are you doing?
Hi, doing well. Thank you.
So you were my very first interview, and that was about a year ago. And just as a recording of this podcast, I was just checking and I've got a little over 6,000 downloads on the podcast. So that's really cool, huh? How fun is that?
That's great.
Yeah. And so you're going to help me keep it spicy here with a discussion on resentment. I've previously talked about uncertainty and guilt. So this is the third in the informal series about various emotions. And you came to mind because I think some of our original podcasts that we did together a year ago, that this came up a little bit. And then you and I have just had some very deep discussions on that. So does that sound like a really exciting that we could talk about resentment today?
It absolutely does.
Before we get to that, I had promised everybody an update. When we talked in April, we talked a little bit about the situation with your mom, that she was having a birthday, a big birthday, and was going to come in the summer, and we weren't quite sure if she was going to come or how it was going to go. So since the topic is aging parents, do you have any updates on your mom or dad that we already talked about?
So with my mom, I think the birthday went really well, and it's very interesting how that turned out because both my brothers went, they flew down to Florida to be with her, and it didn't end up being a huge party like I had originally anticipated. It actually was just a dinner. And my mom came to see me over the summer prior to the party, and we spent probably 4 days together, and she came to see me and my children, and I think we both felt that was a nice substitute to the party. And so really, there wasn't any blaming or shaming after that event. We actually talked about it face to face, and she said she was disappointed that I couldn't attend the party, but she understood that I had obligations for my children during the school year, which made it difficult for me to travel in September. So it actually, I call that a win.
Oh, good. Excellent. And your dad, is he still as busy as ever, it sounds like?
So he is. He is still playing tennis, doubles tennis 3 times a week, and walking 3 miles a day and spending his time living between Hawaii, California, and Houston, Texas. So he is living his best life with my stepmom.
And how old is your dad?
81.
81. My goodness. So he's still driving and still
absolutely, yep,
engaged.
Living independently.
And your mom, she's still in independent living, right? She's not in assisted living?
She is. She's in an apartment that's part of a larger complex that offers different levels of care. But she has her meals in a dining area, really just dinner. And then there are also options for lunch, like a grill out by the pool. But she really just has like laundry. She has somebody that does some light cleaning in her apartment. So it's a really nice situation for her. I know that when she retired, since she had been a stay-at-home mom for a long time, she was really tired of preparing all the family meals. And so it's, she appreciates not having to do that.
How would you say she's been in the aftermath of her second husband passing away, which that had not happened that much long before we spoke last time last year?
I think she's grieving. She acknowledged to me that she's grieving, and she has found a very supportive group of women at her facility, and they do like meditation group. I think that whenever you reside in a place like that, that becoming a widow is quite common, and it's only a matter of time. And so there's a lot of women who spend time together, who support one another, and multiple people reached out to her after Tom passed away. And so I think she's really felt supported, and any number of women will call her in the evening and make plans to have dinner with her, because again, that's, where do you sit if you always sat at a table for two with your spouse and suddenly your spouse is gone? So people have been very kind to her, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, excellent. Thank you for that update. I want to make sure I stay true to my word and do circle back when I say I will. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so You and I have talked about resentment before, and in my head, resentment is in a larger font, a larger bold font than many of the other emotions that can be experienced and one in life or two in the process of taking care of somebody else. And I've always regarded resentment as a particularly toxic or corrosive emotion to experience. And I looked up kind of some various definitions, and it's usually somewhere along the lines of a feeling of anger or bitterness stemming from something being unfair or unjust. And I'm not even sure that encapsulates it very well. Do you have a thumbnail way that you describe resentment?
There's a lot of information about resentment in the Alcoholics Anonymous literature, which is very helpful to review that. I think that resentment leads to contempt, which basically destroys relationships, so romantic or otherwise. And a resentment can be many things. Oftentimes, I think it's a response to us not being clear in what our boundaries are. And agreeing to do something for someone, either getting talked into it or feeling like I should want to do this for this person based on the relationship that we have, or that person may be calling in a chit, so to speak. I did this for you several years ago, and I'm calling in my favor, whatever it is. And our initial response to that is, this isn't something that I can do or I'm willing to do right now. And yet, something in me says yes anyway, and I don't do it. I do it with anger, and that leads to resentment.
I like that you said that, because I think of it almost in a physical sense, like when I'm acting through my own resentment, so I'm resenting something but continuing to do it, I almost feel like my body is stationary, but I'm willing it forward through a very negative emotion. It's like my body wants to not do this and just stay completely still, and I'm just like thrusting forward or something, like I am like, we are going to do this, damn it. And it is the fuel that when you act with resentment, the fuel is so corrosive and toxic and bad. Like you can't, it comes at a huge cost. Like I feel like you're doing a lot of things. You're first betraying yourself. That's why it feels so bad. It's not something that's either within your value system or something you want to do. This is different than laziness or I just don't feel motivated to do this today. This is, to me, it's a much deeper emotion. And so not only are you doing that to yourself, but you're lying to somebody else, right? You're like, I think I should do this, or I'll do this one time. And if they honestly knew how you felt, a lot of times the dynamic would be different. So we almost have to put forth a different presence in life when truly that's not how you're feeling. It's like a discord, right?
Yes. And the question always arises, or when someone asks me to do something, I have to really stop and think about it and say, is this something that I can say yes to without resentment? Is this something that I feel passionate about? Is this person asking me something that's really appropriate for the closeness of our relationship? Because sometimes people will ask you to do things that maybe are very time consuming, and based on the affinity or the closeness of their relationship, they really shouldn't be asking for your time, energy, or commitment for that. So I always weigh all of those things. And then I ask myself, is this something that I can do joyfully? Or is this something that I'm leaning into resentment? Because resentment is toxic for me, and it's toxic for that person. Because I think that they may not know it, that you're doing it in resentment, but it comes out later in the relationship when you asked me to do that thing and I really didn't want to do it. Or a lot of times, whatever the thing is, it can be sabotaged in some way. So maybe the presentation isn't as good as you could have done because you were rushed and you said yes, and maybe it's not as well received by the audience, whatever it is, right? Or you're making something. Like I like to bake for people, and the times when I've been rushed or I haven't had enough time, sometimes it just doesn't turn out right. And then you're like, oh, great, I promised this person. And now what am I going to do? Am I going to make it over? Am I going to have to go back to the store? It's like this death spiral at things that happen during this process when you're living in resentment.
Yeah. And I was going to, I think another unique feature of resentment is it can be very sneaky to me. Meaning you might start doing something and it feels fine. Maybe even feels, maybe not joyous, but maybe it just feels neutral. And then depending on the depth of what's happening or how frequent or just how time consuming, like you said, or resource consuming it might be, as that increases over time, I feel it's like a little pie chart and the resentment might start at 1% and then it's 5% and then 7%. And it's hard to know when it's growing, like it's at the very early stages, right? And then it bubbles over and you're like, where did this come from? But oftentimes there was like little hints of it, like maybe I'm procrastinating, maybe I'm not answering as quickly, or maybe I'm just trying to come up with ways with it. It doesn't seem to go 0 to 60 quickly. It just seems like one of those sneaky or subversive emotions that when you keep batting it away, it'll just come back in more force over time.
Yes, I agree. And one of the ways that people can demonstrate their resentment too is by not making the deadline, right? Which is, I know I promised I would get this to you, but I really wasn't able to do that. And sorry, or maybe not so sorry, right? You're going to experience the pain of this in addition to me. And part of my resentment is maybe then some more passive-aggressive behavior on my part about, you shouldn't have asked me to do this anyway.
And I see, we could talk about different settings. So in the workplace, like the classic resentment is when, say, somebody gets promoted and you thought you should have been promoted, and then now that person is asking you to do things, you know, and you have this resentment that they got this position and you didn't get this position, and that can... it's almost like channeling communication through like procrastination or poor work. And it shows up in different ways. I'm not even sure it's all conscious. It's anything to do with this person is not going to be at my best because deep down, I don't want to be doing this anyway.
Right. Or if they picked a new person that came from, say, out of state or a different company, I'm not going to help train them. So I'm not going to do that because I resent the fact that they chose a different candidate. And then now I'm not going to be helpful, which to me feels like I'm picking up my own marbles and I'm going to go home and play my own game by myself.
And you might have to stay at home because you might get fired for doing that.
That's not a good team dynamic. That's not.
So let's drill down and talk about this in terms of aging parents, because it's a little bit different in that context. And I'll talk about where I see it mostly. It's indiscriminating. So you can have resentment for your siblings is a big one. And I'm seeing that right now. One of my friends is having a lot of issues with her mom. She's in the hospital. The mom had 8 children, 7 of which are still living. And she's racing up to the hospital in the middle of the night. And of course, she's the most involved, that was like always checking on mom and taking her to appointments. Oh, and she works. And I was talking to her just last night about this. And she said, here I am just trying to not use my sick days, going to see my mom in the middle of the night. And my siblings text me, will you just send me some updates? And they live in the same city I live in, but I'm the one racing up there. I'm going to be there. I'm going to do the hard things. And they're just like on a text string, I'll wait to hear from you. And you could hear the resentment dripping.
Yeah.
And then she goes, she says, they never did anything for her anyway. They never tried. They never reached out. They never tried to help me. And this is no different, is what she said. And I was just thinking about this. And siblings is a big one. This has come up multiple times on the podcast. It's just the participation or non-participation, or just this idea that we're all equal here in that we're all siblings and supporting these aging parents, but there tends to be an unequal distribution. And I think you've seen that a couple times in your own friends, right? I wouldn't say in your family, because you have this unique situation where that isn't something that you're always worried about. Your parents seem pretty set to age well independently. But what have you seen or heard in that particular context around your friend group?
I would say in my friend group, there's a couple things. One is when there's a woman who's a child And when there's a man, that the caregiving responsibilities naturally fall to the female. And that typically men will duck under the, I don't know what to do, or the way that I can help in this situation is to send money. And again, it becomes we talk about the emotional labor that women do in their households when they're raising their own children. This also becomes the emotional labor of a daughter who is tending to the needs of aging parents with less participation on the course with their male siblings. That's what I've seen. That, of course, is resulting in stereotypes, because I've also seen different things happen when there's two gay men that are a couple and decides that he's going to take care of his mother. So that's a different dynamic. And I think it's also important to discuss how we can caretake without going to resentment. And part of that is negotiating our own position around the time that we have to actually spend. In the example that you previously gave, this person who's going to the hospital every day has to really look at how much time do I have in my current life based on the roles that I fulfill spend at the hospital. And maybe that's not every day. Maybe it's three times a week, or maybe it's one time a week. And then the response is, I'm going to go see mom every Monday and I'll update you on Monday, but the rest of the time you need to go yourself.
Right.
Or what? I mean, I think part of that is having agency in one's life and also clarifying what the expectations are amongst brothers and sisters. For we have this situation in which this person is struggling or not able to care for themselves. And how are we all going to participate to make this work? And the truth is, if you have a sibling that says, I'm not participating, there's really nothing you can do about it.
No, you can shame them and harass them.
You can. You absolutely can. My experience with that is that it often doesn't work.
Renee, you mentioned a couple, and I wanted to. So first, we talked about sibling issues, and I think we're going to go kind of relationship by relationship. So yeah. One is the siblings. The second is a couple. And I got married when I was 21 years old, and I can't imagine that David and I had a lot of lengthy conversations about my grandmother coming to live with us once we had been married 12 years or whatever it was. And no, I'm a very family-oriented person, and I knew I would want, of course, if that had come up, that I would try to do something, and I tried to marry somebody who would be supportive of how family-centric I am. But you don't know that when you're 21 years old. You don't hardly know anything. And so it's possible I could have married somebody who that didn't work for them. And we would have had to hash that out way far into our relationship. And this is a topic I think doesn't come up in the dating scene that much, or the, I don't know, even... I mean, we talk about big things like having kids or retirement or where we want to live, but I can see that easily happening late in a relationship, that you're suddenly trying to negotiate on either side, either parent, even step parents, however that works, that there's a sudden new need. So what have you seen as far as that's concerned?
My first experience with that was actually in like junior high and high school. And I remember my mom telling me about I believe it was a friend of hers or someone that she knew from church. And this woman had raised her own children and actually had, I believe, one of her parents living with her with dementia and one of her in-laws living with her. So she had two adult geriatric demented people living with her. And I thought, oh boy. I wonder what kind of conversation went down in that household and how much of that is voluntary, how much of it is they've got no place to go, or I don't know. And I think that was such an eye-opener to hear my mom talk about watching that experience when she went over to their house. And I remember thinking, like, this person went from one caretaking role to another. And I don't know. I think that's a lot to take on as someone who is maybe newly empty nested, and suddenly you've got two adults in your home that need total care, and you're expected to do that. And I don't, my mom never commented on her relationship on whether this was a voluntary thing or not, or how they worked out that worked out between her and her husband, but that's a lot.
It definitely triangulates your value systems, meaning you have your value system with your own partner, and then that can come into conflict with your value system about your parents. And it's an interesting negotiation, especially with so many unknowns or so many variables. How long is this person going to live? Or how long, how many medical issues are we going to have? Or how much care are they going to need? And of course, you don't know that going into it. So it's not even like you can have a lengthy discussion about it. And so just going back to resentment, what can really compound what is already a difficult situation is when the resentment that I guess a new nidus for resentment within the relationship itself. And when you're taking care of somebody, you need that partnership, that marriage to be as strong as possible, right? And you're already going through something difficult. And then you introduce that variable, I think the resentment can be strong and it can be familial. That's your parent and not my parent. Or it can be, you know, hey, that's a lot of money. It costs a lot of money to take care of people, even if they're just living with you. Everything that it takes to have anybody in your home costs money. And it's not just the time, it's your attention too. And this happens to fall at a time where a lot of people are empty nesting. And that was that period of time where that couple was going to travel. And then suddenly there's this new demand on the system. And so I think resentment is not just limited to a potential emotion between the siblings, but then also the partnership as well. Any other comments on that?
No, I agree totally.
So go ahead.
There's an interesting book that I remember I was reading years ago from, I think she was a psychologist that was on Oprah, and I think her name was Robin Smith. But she had a book and it was questions a couple should ask each other before they get married. And she divided it up into sections. And one of the sections was all about caregiving in adulthood and who's responsible for who's parent.
Yeah, that's really smart.
But there were a lot of very far reach that felt were really important. And that in life, I'm thinking those are questions that I definitely want answers to. Like, what if I enter into a partnership with you, what are our caregiving roles going to be, right? And if you require total care, do you have enough resources on your own to go in a nursing home? Or are you expecting your partner to actually take care of you? And that can be devastating for people.
Yeah, so that's like a new dynamic, which is that's if one of the people in a partnership end up needing care. Is right. That what you're referring to? Yeah. As far as like children, I think there's also that relationship between the adult child and then the person needing extra assistance or extra care. And just in the course of having this podcast, and I think if you've listened to a lot of the interviews we've done, it varies quite a bit from I'm honored to do anything that you might need at any time, all the way to don't call me. And so I can see when you're farther out on either spectrum, that can be really challenging. Like your resentment for the time, attention, or resources it takes to do just about anything. And that's, I think, a particularly corrosive emotion to have, especially now in the context of you need tremendous empathy and patience to help that population, right? So if somebody has dementia or they have a disability, it's like the worst of combinations. So when you need to have your very best self, most patient and present, and then at the same time, you're like, I don't have the time, resources, or attention to do this right now, then it can create a lot of resentment that I think can boil over into the relationship. You can feel it. Or if you're on the receiving end of resentment, which to me is a huge alarm bell, right? I don't think anybody would want to be cared for and then feel like the person caring for them was resentful of being there.
Yes. Yes. Nobody likes an ungrateful giver. And yeah, sometimes we do those things out of obligation and not necessarily love, or maybe some combination thereof. But yes.
So I know you've had episodes in your life in various contexts that you have felt resentment. Let's just put some more color around it. What does it feel like in your body when you feel resentment?
I think I feel a disassociation from my true self and that I have stepped out of my own integrity.
What about like in your physical body? Do you feel it in your throat or in your chest or your stomach?
I feel that I feel almost like a little lightheaded and that there's little thoughts percolating or flying around in my brain that aren't necessarily in control, maybe anxious, just like I am not. I mean, you know me when I'm a very calm and self-regulated person. And so I feel out of sorts in that way, maybe ruminating a lot over and over, a lot of blaming of others when in fact I need to be looking at myself and say, how did I contribute to this? How did I not be clear in my values or what I was able to give at the time? And also willing to sit with people's approval, because that's a big thing. I think that people say yes in the first place because they don't want to live with the blowback of saying no to people that we care about, because that's hard, right? And people want you to change and people want you to be, I really need you to do this for me. And one of the things that I learned to incorporate into my relationships, especially when someone was pressuring me, is I would say to them, look, I know this is important to you, but I would like you to respect my boundary on this issue. And I don't say no to my friends or my family very often, but when I do, I mean it.
And I've seen you have that conversation. It's phenomenal. And the thing is, we think that if we don't have that conversation, we're somehow avoiding pain. It's more just like a shift and a lie, right? Instead of just saying, hey, this doesn't work for me, which would create some immediate friction. I'll just take the long-term friction with myself and overpromise and underdeliver in other parts of my life so that I don't have to have this difficult conversation. And I think the truth is that for people that care about you, that's a very reasonable discussion. Like for people that respect that or respect you, that makes sense to them. And I'll give an example, and this was fairly recent. I know somebody at work had asked you to bake. This was just in October. I don't know, somebody's birthday or some event. And you said, that doesn't work for me this week. And they're like, oh, come on. But you're like the resident baker and we need this done. And it's so important and so and so. And you were just able to just say that I can't do that this week. And I know it sounds like such a ridiculous conversation that it seems that easy. But I think once we do that over and over again, we get so used to it too. And that resentment is very costly. To me, when I describe it to myself, it's like very physically costly to do it. I feel very tired when I do it that way. When I'm doing it because I'm happy to be there and because it's me being congruent with who I want to be, it feels light. It feels energizing. And when I'm not and I'm doing it out of resentment, and I don't even mean resentment for other people, I'd say most of my resentment is to myself, actually. That could be a whole other podcast, right? But
right.
My past self for creating obligations that I am having a hard time meeting, or my current self for not doing whatever I need to be doing. There's all sorts of dynamics there. But anyway, I think just the idea that this is still an ongoing conversation in your head, and learning to pick up the signals like, hey, does this sound like resentment to me? So let's ask some questions. What sounds like resentment? And I think it has to do with the language is I have to.
Yeah.
I really don't want to, but I should.
No one else can do this.
Nobody else can do this. Right. If I was a good person, I would do this. I don't know if that's all the language there. To me, it feels very heavy and it feels very like in my chest and in my throat. And I feel like it's a physical suppression of an energy. Like I really don't want to do this right now. And that to me is very different than like just being challenged. I don't want to do this right now because I'm scared I might fail. That's a different feeling than I really don't want to be doing this right now. And I think we're very much trained to push that away and continue doing things and hoping that resentment will resolve. And I'm not sure that it works like that.
Or how about, have you ever been in a situation where people start removing barriers because they want to know what your barrier is to helping them? So in my family, I couldn't attend an event. And so I was offered, we'll pay for your hotel so you can come. it's not the financial barrier that was the problem. It was the barrier that I didn't have time to make this family commitment. And I wasn't going to pull my two children out of school on a Friday and drive 5 hours to try and make this event happen. It just wasn't possible. And offering some sort of, I'm going to remove this barrier for you, it wasn't the right barrier, right? If you could give me a whole extra day, or you could move this event to a Saturday where I actually am not working and my children are not in school, then yeah, I could more than likely attend. But yeah, that was not helpful.
So I want to, now we've talked characterizing where this can occur and what it might feel like or look like, I don't want to just leave it at that. I do think there are some strategies. If resentment to me is a signal, I don't think it itself needs to be mitigated. Oh, I don't want to feel resentment, so I'm just going to push it away or cancel it out or reason my way through it. Like, to me, it's just a red light. And when you feel that, whether you feel it physically or emotionally or just even in your own language, you get to know your own cues for working out of resentment. I think it's just that time to pause and step back and truly understand or question, why would I agree to do something like this? Why would I ask to do something like this? And really go through your value system. I know we brought that up a few times. So that's the most important thing, okay, is to know who you are and what your values are. And if you don't know that, then that's hard to, you'll have to do some long, deep thinking about what your values are. And they're different for everybody.
Therapy to figure what that is.
Or go to therapy and figure out what your values are. But once they are and you decided this is the person I want to be, and it's not infinite. You can't just, you're not just like, I'm a good person. There's a finite amount of time and attention and resources in your lifetime. And if you don't know what your value system is, then I'll tell you what it is if you show me how you spend 24 hours in a day or how you spend, you could look at any of these, spend your time, spend your attention, which I feel like is different, even spend your money. And I can characterize back to you what your value system is. And that's the receipts, in my opinion. The receipts for your value system are found in those areas. And specifically your time and attention. Money is a little bit more vague. But with time and attention, and okay, I have a finite allocation and I'm going to give this much to myself or my dog or my kids or my job or whatever it is. Then when there's a new demand on the system, you have to go dig deeper into your values and say, how do I reconcile competing demands on a finite amount of time, on a finite amount of attention? And I think when we hear a new demand, then we're thinking that person doesn't know how limited our time and attention might be, right? Since they're allowed to make demands on your time and attention. They're allowed to ask questions or make requests or invite you to things or ask for help, right?
One way of deciding how do you get to resentment is if you're dealing with a finite set of time, circumstances, whatever, and the person who constantly gets less is you, then that leads to resentment.
Yes.
If you're changing yourself and eventually you're emotionally exhausted, depleted, financially depleted, whatever it is, then eventually, yes, you'll look around and say, oh my gosh, those ungrateful people didn't know what it cost me to actually do that for them. Or,
and the shitty thing, if you find yourself in that position, is you can't point the finger at anybody else because it's a large number of people, right?
Yes.
You're the one that overdrafted yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And so you're like, who wrote all these checks for my attention and my time? I'm overdrafted now. And you can't go back and you're like, oh my God, I wrote 30 different checks to 30 different people. And so that's what is also disconcerting is once you get to the bottom of it, maybe it's the liberating and disconcerting thing at the same time, that it still goes back to your allocation of time and attention and resources. And when you have an aging parent that suddenly goes into a health crisis, that's a sudden and unexpected, usually, demand on what is already a spent time and resources, right? They're already spoken for. And so I think instead of feeling like, oh, this is a resentment, I got to push through it, is to find, if possible, some very quiet time to get very clear about how am I going to reconcile these competing requests for this finite resource? And then how can I make a decision that I feel good about? Maybe it's not perfect. Maybe somebody's hurt. Maybe somebody's feelings are not what I want them to be or whatever. Not that you can control anybody's feelings. But I think you're just going to have to accept that when you have those competing demands, that reconciliation is a process in and of itself. But then you stick with it. You stand behind it. This is what I can do. This is what I can't do. to the extent possible.
Yeah.
And I think of myself, if I have grandkids someday, they'll get first dibs on my time and attention, my money, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not my kids, I don't know, but my grandkids, I just have this thought that if I have grandkids someday, but this idea, that's how like grandparents are, right? Like these kids, I'll do everything with them, everything for them. And they get to make that decision. That is a value system. That's a judgment call with their finite time and resources. And even amongst the grandparents, you can see variability in how much time or resources are willing to spend with a grandkid. And I'm not saying what the standard is or good or bad, but I'm just saying these are evident all around you all the time. What are their value system? How are they spending this? And you don't have to do it with judgment and say they should spend more, they should spend less. But that's all the receipts. That's all the evidence. And so I look at that and I look at how other people operate and I adjust in my head and I'm like, I would want to do more of this or less of this if possible. But that resentment, I feel like, is born from getting the signal that something is going wrong and then having to dig a little bit deeper into how you're piecing out yourself. And like you said, if there's nothing left at the end of the day, then the only person who can remake those decisions is you.
That's true. That's the error in thinking, is when you say the person needs to stop asking me.
Or they need to stop having needs.
Or they need to stop having needs because that has nothing to do with you. And
right.
The thing we have control over is our own emotions, responses, feelings, and actions towards another human being.
And I feel like once you tie your wagon to somebody that is having increasing needs over time and you're writing these blank checks, that the resentment can come from the lack of control over, okay, they have first priority in all things all the time, over your time, attention, and resources. And then that's wild. And so then I have to go work backwards and say to my child or my partner or my career or my hobbies, you don't get to be at the top right now. And that can go on for years and years. That creates other problems, right? That's just part of this. So
that's, if you get into a toxic pattern where one person in a relationship is always the giver and the other person's the taker, then that ultimately leads to contempt, which is a relationship killer.
Why do you say that? What do you mean by contempt?
I think one of the number one predictors of whether marriages fail is the idea of contempt that occurs. And part of what happens over time, I think, is that resentment can build and lead to contempt. And I think that's almost impossible to recover from. And the Gottmans were a couple who studied this phenomenon amongst people who'd been married and were able to predict with reasonable certainty who was going to survive their marriage. So I find that information highly interesting and useful.
So maybe contempt is like an accumulation of resentments over time and it just sort of comes together.
I also think, yes, that it coalesces over time. And it also means that you begin, I think, to question the character of the person that you're with and not seeing it as a temporary problem, but rather a defect of character.
Yeah.
That leads to questions of, did I marry the right person? Or is this a phase we're going through? And I think that just, yeah.
The other thing it made me think of is, I feel like when there's a lot of chaos or demands in your life, that you can pick one thing. Like, so I call it the perfect daughter syndrome, which is, this is what a perfect daughter would do. And this is the most important thing. And that creates certainty. And that I know that this should be the number one priority at all times. And there is actually a lull of comfort. And even though the actual work is uncomfortable, you feel lulled into comfort. Like, this is my value system. This is the most important thing to me. And it very well may be for some people, but I always talk about it in terms of the zero sum game. But what else is happening? And what's the relationship with yourself on the other end of this? Or other people in your life, right? Unless you live in a vacuum. Live solely with one under other persons. Anyway, back to like just functional or practical things, just to sum us up. I'm sorry I'm taking you all over the map today. But the idea is that get clear about what resentment feels like for you. Understand it, meet it, say hello, name it, and know that it's there to ask you to double check your allocation, of time, resources, and attention, and maybe perhaps you're out of step with your own value system or who you really are, who you want to be, right? And that it can occur in multiple relationships. This is not specific in any dynamic. So whether it's with a sibling or a partner or an aging parent, or even probably most commonly, more importantly, yourself, right? That there's a resentment toward yourself, and knowing where that's coming from and identifying it as a limitation. It's a barrier. It's a barrier to doing whatever it is that you don't want to be doing in your life, or whatever is most congruent with your value system, and making the hard decisions, whether they're early and you have a tough conversation and say, I can't do this, or this is what I can do, or later, right? It's just eventually going to reach a point where it's too much. I think that's all I have to say. I was just researching this before we talked, and there was a study showing that holding on to anger and hostility and resentment is associated with a higher risk of heart disease. So if you want a good reason to recognize and dig deeper with the resentment, that's one, right? And also that it overall impacts on well-being just in general. That's not the person I want to be. I don't ever want to show up resentful in any situation. And I like to identify with myself and in the future, if I'm making a hard decision or having a tough conversation, and it would be, but I really like who I am on the other side of this.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Again, sorry, I know this is a crazy journey through different aspects of resentment, but
right.
I appreciate that you're willing to come on and have this conversation, and that this is a topic that we can talk about and share with other people. And yeah, so thank you again for being here.
Absolutely. Awesome.
All right. Take care. Nice to hear from you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, everyone. It's Rebecca. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'd like to take just a moment to review the disclaimer. This podcast is for informational and occasional entertainment purposes only. Nothing discussed here is formal medical, legal, or financial advice. By listening to the podcast, we are not creating a patient-doctor relationship between you and myself or any of the guests. Really, it's just me and a possible guest or two, sometimes three, sitting around talking about difficult topics related to aging parents. If you have or suspect that you might have a medical problem or condition, you should seek advice from a licensed medical professional. If you have any questions or concerns, please read the full disclaimer in the show notes or contact me directly. Thank you again for joining us today. I can't wait to see you next week. Have a good day.